The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, everyone. This is Bahati Mutisia for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazine. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Teen Vogue. The first two articles give some background information on Black is King, the Beyoncé visual album which debuted on Disney Plus on July 31st. And author Antoinette Isama wrote two articles providing some background information on that. So I'll start with those two. Black is King, Beyoncé's long-awaited visual album inspired by Disney's The Lion King, dropped Friday, and the need to catch the premiere in the wee hours of the morning was so worth it. Queen Bee remains consistent in celebrating the Black experience, and this project takes such storytelling up a notch. It's arguably even what we wanted the live-action edition of the classic film to be. A year in the making, the visual album pushes the needle with its portrayal of Simba's journey in search of his identity, love, and betrayal. And we have the legion of directors from Africa and the diaspora to thank for that. I worked with a diverse group of very gifted directors, actors, and creatives from all over the world to reimagine the story of the Lion King, Beyoncé says in an appearance on Good Morning America. The narrative unfolds through music videos, fashion, dance, beautiful natural settings, and raw new talent. My hope for this film is that it shifts the global perspective of the word Black, which has always meant inspiration, love, and strength and beauty to me. Black is King means Black is regal and rich in history, in purpose, and in lineage. Black is King takes you on an Afrofuturistic voyage from the stars and nature's wonders to making stops in Johannesburg, Accra, London, Belgium, the Grand Canyon, Lagos, and anywhere else you'd find Black people living and thriving. Here's a breakdown of who you'll meet along the way. We'll try to keep the spoilers to a minimum. Beyoncé's family. As seen in her previous visuals, Beyoncé makes a point to feature her close friends and family, including Miss Tina Knowles Lawson, Jay-Z, Blue Ivy Carter, a true star in the making, Rumi Carter, Sir Carter, and B's Destiny Child sis, Kelly Rowland, all throughout Black is King. The artist featured on The Lion King, The Gift. Beyoncé also released the deluxe edition of The Lion King, The Gift, which is an album, leading up to the premiere of her visual album. And you'll notice the album's new tracks are incorporated into the score of the film alongside the songs we know so well. B took this as an opportunity to put faces to the names behind these cross-cultural collaborations featuring Lord Africana, Yemi Alade, Jesse Reyes, Shatta Wale, Salatiel, Pharrell Williams, WizKid, Tiwa Savage, Mr. Easy, Ninja, Tierra Whack, Busiswa, and Moonchild Sanelli. The Brown Skin Queens. Brown Skin Girl is the anthem Black women of all ages didn't know they needed, and the music video that accompanies this will get you in your feelings in the best way. It's regal and simply beautiful, celebrating the importance of Black girls and Black women loving who they are inside and out. Naomi Campbell, Adut Akech, Aweng Chuol, Lupita Nyong'o, and Kelly Rowland again are faces of note as B gives them these queens and B gives some of these queens their flowers in the song. The cast. The reimagined story of The Lion King weaves its way through the musical segments of the film, and the cast portraying the characters we know so well are truly ones to watch, hailing from South Africa and Nigeria. Fola Jomi Akinmurele plays young Simba, with Nyaniso Nsikelelo Dzedzi playing grown Simba. Connie Chiumi portrays Sarabi, Simba's mother, with Warren Masemola playing Scar. The illustrious Nandi Madida plays Nala, the late Mary Twala as Rafiki, and finally, rising actor Stephen Ojo, playing an abstract character, the Blue Man. So that concludes the first article, and Antoinette Isama continues in the next article, titled, We Spotted These Hidden Meanings in Black is King. Nods to Africa's past and present is seen in the film are both subtle yet loud. Now that we've spotted the notable cameos in Beyoncé's Black is King, we're going to dig a bit deeper into a few cultural moments and hidden meanings you may have missed in the film. Some of these nods to Africa's past and present seen in the film are both subtle yet loud. Again, it also pays to give credit to the crew, the directors, cinematographers, stylists, and creative directors. Visionaries including Kwasi Fojor, Blitz Bazaweli, Jen Nkiru, and Ibra Ake, to name a few, were clearly given the room to weave their distinct aesthetics and knowledge into an engaging reimagination of Simba's journey. According to Joshua Kisi, the photographer and creative director behind TONL and See in Black, Black is King was even re-edited months before its release to ensure it reflected the current and unfortunate bout of police brutality that the Black community was enduring. What I saw and what I know from the creative co-director, Kwasi Fojor, making sure it touched on the right things was of great importance, and I think everyone contributed in such a beautiful way, Kisi tells Teen Vogue. Kisi, who got the call to join the production as a second unit director from Fojor while he was in Ghana burying his maternal grandmother, provided even more context to the bigger impact this visual album has on what cross-cultural conversations look like within the global Black community. This is the first time where we get to have a global conversation within the diaspora and beyond of what it means to be Black and what it means to be African at that. And I think there are many different nuanced conversations within that and topics on how that is expressed, who says it, who owns that narrative, how that narrative is actually beneficial to people that are continental Africans on the ground, as well as spread out throughout the diaspora. There are so many different layers of it, he explains. As one person, I'm able to amplify as much as possible. But how do I begin to unwind the webs that have been woven around what Blackness is, what being African is, globally? Even more so, given Beyoncé's platform that rests atop of America's cultural currency, she's shown countless times what it looks like to send out a message as a Black woman that's larger and louder than most are able to communicate. With that responsibility, how do we use it? Kisi asks. I think Black is King is one of the perfect examples of that. With that in mind, let's get into the hidden meanings and symbols seen in the visuals for Already and My Power below. Already. Already featuring Ghanaian dance hall legend Shatta Wale and Major Lazer is the musical interlude that opens up with the voice of Rafiki encouraging Simba to look inward and discover who he really is, the true king of Pride Rock. Blue men wearing cowrie shell headpieces designed by Ivorian designer La Falaise Dion cascade a baobab tree covering their eyes with B front and center. The bass heavy track then switches to Beyoncé in an intricate formation reminiscent of Salvador Dali's experimentation with the female body forming a skull, but this time B and her dancers donning crescent moon bodysuits by Marine Serret, emulate a lion. Stephen Ojo is the star of the video, and you just need to watch to understand why. The power in his movements, shout out to him teaching B how to zanku, bursts of energy and regality. You'll also see B rocking a custom ensemble by Ivorian designer Loza Maleombo, in their duet moments with a mouth garb accessory, reminiscent of lip plates most notably donned by the Surma and Mursi people of Omo River Valley in Ethiopia, designed by Nigerian Dominican twins Sol and Dynasty Ogul of El Enchantor. The cultural nods are abundant as the music video cuts through Johannesburg's drag race culture. Take note of the cars spinning in the circles to members of the DWP Academy dancing distinct Afrobeats moves as blue people in Accra, back to Beyoncé in her ethereal world in Los Angeles. You'll also notice cattle, goats, cowrie shell, gold, rings, grills, do-rags, and chains in already and throughout the film. These items are both traditional and contemporary symbols of currency and status that transcend the global African diaspora. These items and what they stand for still permeate everyday life on the continent and beyond, and that's what Kissy aimed to do with his creative direction in and around Accra. Although my role included filming dancers and things like that, there needed to be everyday perspective, nuance, and narrative in the piece, he adds. They weren't celebrities, but there's this beauty in what royalty could look like in everyday people, and I think that's where a lot of the discrepancy happens. It's not necessarily about the direct connection of king, queen, and those types of ideas. It's really about how we live. It's normalizing that royalty goes beyond the aspirational and imperial perspective and can be seen in the everyday because that's how I feel whenever I come home. Beyoncé switches through many crowns in the video, through her Bantu knot look, her emerald green gele. This iconic look was designed by Jerome Lamar, and the Zebu horn headpiece interwoven with braids. Chateau Wale's moments on horseback, one of the few thrones seen in the video, feature a hidden umbrella, giving a nod to Akan culture, with its peoples spread throughout Ghana, Cote d'Ivoire, Benin, and Togo. These moments in front of the cowhide draw inspiration from South Africa's Xhosa women, again with the horns and the pipe. There are a plethora of circles in this video, especially seen with the blue man, Ojo, connecting with a woman donning the paint and hair resembling the Himba women of the Namibia and Angola. These circles symbolize the circle of life, because Lion King, and unity, as we see black men vibe out with each other with Chateau Wale and B. You'll notice slow motion shots of black men wearing cobalt blue suits jumping up and down in unison. This is reminiscent of the Adumu dance, also known as Maasai warrior jumping. The Maasai people are native to southern Kenya and northern Tanzania. Shout out to Kenya. That's my family's country. And now the visuals for My Power. The visuals for My Power represents the battle between Scar and Simba, with Nala and her lionesses backing the true king of Pride Rock with fervent strength. This same energy is seen with this music video and is all things girl power. We see multi-generational strength with the appearance of Ernestine Shepherd, the oldest competitive female bodybuilder in the world, still dominating at 84 years old. We see the strength of motherhood through the pregnant dancer adorned with painted patterns on her stomach, dancing with the same fervor as her counterparts. Blue Ivy is a whole moment, twinning with Beyoncé in style and confidence. Most of the women artists featured in My Power appear in this segment, with Nyjah opening up with her catchy hook and Tierra Whack unveiling her white goddess-like outfit from underneath a textured cape with all the drama we live for. We were able to touch base with South Africa's own Busiswa and Moonchild Sanelly, waymakers in music in their own right, where they dish their experience, shooting the concept and the meaning behind some of the symbols seen in the clip. My Power was shot in November of last year, Busiswa says. We have been anticipating this for many months, I can't stop crying because I'm so proud to stand in that place for my people, she tells Teen Vogue. The artist adds that she's wearing a headpiece by a South African artist, Nikiwe Dlova, and a creative hairstyle by a South African hairstylist. To be singing in my language of Xhosa, to stand in that place for my African people, I feel so honored. In the video, I felt like a sorceress, a queen. I felt everything majestic and royal. We were treated with the utmost care and respect, and being on that set was the most incredible experience of my whole life. Moonchild Sanelli adds that the bling-encrusted cattle horns she wore are indeed symbolic within South Africa's diverse cultures. Generally, cattle horns can either be a symbol for danger or a symbol of leadership. Having to rock them was amazing, she says. Beyonce was originally supposed to wear them, but they wouldn't stay on top of her hairstyle, but they stayed on top of my mop. It was quite heavy, but so magnificent. I felt strong. I felt like I am power. The flower-like symbol on the floor of the set is inspired by the Ghanaian Adinkra symbol, Bese Saka, which represents affluence, power, abundance, togetherness, and unity. We came as women from different countries to stand for our collective power together, Moonchild Sanelli explains. Both Busiswa and Moonchild look forward to black girls all over the world, and even those who come from their communities, to look at this moment and be inspired. I'm proud that young black girls from my hometown, Mthatha, in South Africa's Eastern Cape, are going to see me and know that anything is possible, Busiswa says. What I would love people to take away from this music video is that we may be going through gender-biased violence in South Africa. We may be going through all these things where women have to fight and fight to show that they are worthy, Moonchild concludes. But having a child watch and see that it's possible, wherever in the world they come from, to make their dreams come true, to fight for what they stand for, to believe in themselves, and to remember that they are just pure magic. I want them to be reminded of their strength and that there's nothing that is impossible. Well, I hope you enjoyed that background information on that iconic production that is now streaming on Disney Plus. Another historic moment in the past few weeks was the loss of Congressman John Lewis. And there's an article in Teen Vogue by Noura Abdulhak and Jacqueline Corin, which is a tribute to him, remembering his legacy and the important and amazing person that he was. So I'll read that one next. It's titled, March for Our Lives, Leaders Remember John Lewis as an Ally and Inspiration. This op-ed recounts the late congressman's support for the youth movement against gun violence, and this was published July 30th, 2020. In late February 2018, just days after the shooting in Parkland, Florida, a group of us traveled to Washington, D.C., to share our story with policymakers and demand change. Of all the meetings we had that day, it was our time with Congressman John Lewis that stood out. We didn't have to convince him that gun violence had become an epidemic in this country. We didn't have to ask him to step up and lead. We didn't have to quietly wonder whether he was offering hollow lip service to promises to act because we were high school students. Lewis, the civil rights champion, was on our side. He looked us in our eyes and spoke to us plainly. He said it wouldn't be easy. He told us to fight and not back down, no matter what. Lewis was a moral leader, not only for Black Americans, but for all Americans. The son of sharecroppers and a student of the segregated Alabama public school system, Lewis didn't just face widespread injustice and racism, he made it his life's work to fight it. In doing so, he challenged all of us to improve the world around us for ourselves and the betterment of our common humanity. To us, Lewis was more than a leader. He was an architect of movements that have withstood the test of time and the heavy weight of injustice. At age 17, Lewis wrote to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and asked him how to get involved. A few short years later, he would be standing beside him, speaking out over the National Mall at the historic March on Washington. When we conceived the March of our lives, the March for our lives, excuse me, it was Lewis's legacy as a young person that gave us permission to believe we could do something that had never been done before. When we planned the nationwide marches of 2018, it was Lewis's path we followed. And when we prepared to give our speeches, we couldn't help but be inspired by Lewis's generation and how it had created a moment like none other to demand and achieve progress. His leadership inspired and educated generations of activists on how to change the systems that have long been used to oppress and discriminate. He showed us that we must be willing to risk it all for what is right. And above all, we must remain vigilant. As Dr. King would say, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Few people know what immediately after the Parkland shooting it was. Few people know that immediately after the Parkland shooting, it was Lewis who invited us to his office. At a time of deep fear and trauma, his words and the warmth seemed to shine hope on us in the early stages of understanding the strategy that had just happened. At a time of deep fear and trauma, his words and warmth seemed to shine hope on us in the early stages of understanding the tragedy that had just happened. A month later, Lewis was with us once again, marching alongside us in the March for Our Lives in Atlanta. Before leading the march, he told those who had gathered, "We are never too old, we are never too young to march, to speak up, to speak out." When we hosted a town hall in Atlanta, as we had been doing nationwide through our Town Hall for Our Lives series, we invited Lewis, though we assumed he'd be too busy to show up. But he did show up. He came for our entire town hall, stayed late, and talked to every single one of us afterward. That's John Lewis. He always remained connected to his community. Showed up for barbecues, birthdays, town halls, marches, you name it. He knew this work was worth dedicating a lifetime to it. We will never forget the kindness and warmth that Lewis showed us and the lessons he taught us. He showed us that age doesn't matter and that anyone can be heard if they stand strong for what's right. He taught us that good trouble is necessary trouble, that these aren't just words, but a winning strategy and tactic for change. Lewis's life exemplified how nonviolent protest is the answer to oppression, injustice, and even for putting an end to America's gun violence epidemic. Whether crossing the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, marching on Washington in 1963, or sitting in on the floor of the House of Representatives, Lewis led by example, and that example lives in all of us. And March for Our Lives, we will honor Lewis by continuing to march. We will march on in the way that Lewis demanded of us, and we won't stop until we have won the fight for safer schools, safer communities, and a safer America where we no longer live in fear. Thank you, Congressman John Lewis, for being the first marcher for our lives. And it looks like I only have a few minutes left, so I think I'll start this article and then maybe keep it going throughout in the next couple of episodes, because it's advice from therapists from 50 different people. And this is by Alexa Lisitsa. This was published July 9th, 2019, and it reads, "Therapy is expensive, and oftentimes it can be tough to find a therapist that your insurance plan covers. But the idea of going to therapy can also feel so intimidating and shrouded by stereotypes that people avoid it altogether. Hearing about other people's experiences with therapy and the best advice their therapists have given them can be encouraging and take away some of that stigma. Teen Vogue spoke with 50 people of different races, genders, ages, sexualities, and identities about the issues they grapple with in therapy and the best advice their therapists have given them. Some tackled self-perception and expectations, while others drew inspiration and betterment from sessions focused on relationships. Some discussed their mental illness, though not all of the following have one, as is mistakenly assumed by those who seek therapy. Despite their differences, each has a story of devoting part of their week to mental health and hope that by the way of their transparency, someone may be inspired to sit down with a trusted professional who is trained to help. And if not, well, then maybe these lessons can teach you something anyway. So the first person is Billy, and Billy's therapist's advice is, you seem to always talk about what you should and shouldn't do. You seem to always talk about what you should and shouldn't do, how you should or shouldn't be. How do you actually feel? Billy's thoughts. For the first time, I realized that I was focused on aligning with what I thought was right, that I was suppressing, invalidating my feelings. This doesn't mean to act on every emotion, but it's important to acknowledge that the emotions you feel do exist and to find the root to why they exist in order to figure out how to best manage them. Amaris' therapist's advice is, you're not used to having consequences. Amaris' thoughts are, I was at a point in my life when I felt like everything was out of my control, so I was doing things that obviously had repercussions, but I felt like it didn't matter. I realized then that it wasn't something I've always done when things get bad because it was just my coping mechanism. It wasn't helping me, but instead it was just kind of making things worse. Now I'm just more aware of my actions. Sophia's therapist's advice, if you want a 10, you have to work like a 10. That's okay if you do it in one situation, but you want to be a 10 at everything, and the reality is that you just can't. So whenever confronting a task, ask yourself how much of yourself you're willing to give and how much is healthy for you to give. Sophia's thoughts. I'm a perfectionist, so I want everything to be the best it can be, and I'm pretty demanding on myself, and I don't want to rest until it's just how I want it. That is totally exhausting. Now, whenever I'm about to do a task, I ask myself, how much am I willing to give to this task? Because sometimes I want that big, beautiful A, but I'm not willing to work for it. So I lower my expectations according to my mental health and what I know is best for me. All right, well, we've run out of time for today's episode. This is Teen Magazine. I'm Bahati Mutisia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired.